And that's a big price tag, but the American people are worth it.
How much will the pandemic cost, and is it worth it? This is Friday, May 15th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, the UN looks for money to provide psychological help to millions in lockdown. The Australian government tries to debunk a conspiracy theory linking coronavirus to new cell phone technology. And the Afghan army is ordered into offensive mode against the Taliban. That and more, all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump said Wednesday the nation has now conducted 10 million coronavirus tests, amounting to almost 3% of the U.S. population. Democrats in the U.S. House of Representatives said the administration's failure to test early had worsened the crisis and called for more resources as most states around the country begin to relax stay-at-home restrictions. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
After 2 months in lockdown, a gradual reopening, as Americans wonder if the U.S. economy can recover.
I feel that we are going to have a country that's ready to absolutely have one of its best years.
But trillions of dollars in government aid still may not be enough. Democrats say the U.S. needs to catch up on testing while sending more economic aid to Americans.
And we have to address it, and we have to address it in a big way. And that's a big price tag, but the American people are worth it.
Well, Republicans are warning the national debt is expanding too rapidly, and decisions are best made at the local level.
Obviously, you need to keep nursing homes safe, where half of the deaths have been. But there are whole areas of the country, about half the counties have had almost no coronavirus cases. Those can be very safely opened up.
Lawmakers heard there are encouraging signs in a remote hearing with health experts.
We're seeing signs of a slowing epidemic nationally, but we're still going to be reopening against a backdrop of more spread than we anticipated.
One key element of opening up safely.
Have you seen any increase of illness going on at your facility?
Contact efforts like this one just getting underway.
Contact tracing will need to be a key part of our strategy until widespread vaccination can happen.
With a vaccine at least a year away, health experts say the U.S. will also need to ramp up testing efforts, avoiding mistakes made at the beginning of the pandemic.
The outbreak got too big because we didn't have a testing infrastructure that allowed us to put our arms around the outbreak. And so testing was the fundamental failure that forced our country to shut down.
A shutdown that's become the key issue in a presidential election year, even as both sides look for a way out of an unprecedented economic crisis. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. President Trump says he's eyeing ways to crack down on China as retribution for the way it handled the outbreak of the pandemic. A strong typhoon struck the eastern Philippines on Thursday. A nationwide state of emergency imposed in Japan to blunt the coronavirus pandemic has been lifted, with the exception of Tokyo and several other regions. A U.S. Navy warship sailed through the sensitive Taiwan Strait on Wednesday. The Pacific Fleet said the USS McCampbell was sailing through the strait as part of ongoing operations in the Indo-Pacific. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and at the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The United Nations is calling for mental health care to be given to millions of people suffering psychological distress from fear, loneliness, economic upheaval, and any abuse triggered by the COVID-19 pandemic. A UN policy brief, COVID-19 and the Need for Action on Mental Health, issued by UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, explores the issues brought on by the crisis and offers recommendations. Lisa Schlein has more for VOA from Geneva.
National surveys carried out this year reveal widespread prevalence of distress in populations, with levels as high as 35% in China, 60% in Iran, and 45% in the United States. Similar studies among healthcare workers find anxiety levels have risen an average of 45% in countries such as Canada, China, and Pakistan. Devorah Kestel is director of the World Health Organization's Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse. She says measures must be taken now to protect and promote care for such existing conditions.
This is something that needs to be done in the middle of the crisis so that we can prevent things to become worse in the near future. We are all witnessing in every country of the world the risk of an economic turmoil that will affect people.
Kestel says mental health problems have surged during similar economic crises in the past, leading to high rates of suicide. One of the major recommendations in the UN Secretary General's policy brief is to ensure mental health and psychosocial support are widely available in any emergency. What may be feasible in rich countries may not be possible in the developing world. For example, WHO notes 1 in 5 people in South Sudan has a mental health condition, with only one professional available for every 4 million people. Kestel tells VOA that the WHO and other agencies have been working for years to strengthen the capacity of non-mental health professionals to provide care.
We are promoting the modalities where the community, some community leaders or sectors within the community, such as traditional healers in some contexts, could receive the basic knowledge and training that is needed in order to provide care to those in need.
The United Nations says psychological trauma will remain after COVID-19. The disease caused by the coronavirus is gone. It urges nations to reform, strengthen, and invest more money in their mental health care systems. It says these services will be needed to support societies as they recover from the terrible consequences of this life-changing event. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Happening now in Asia. Officials said on Thursday the novel coronavirus has been detected in one of the camps in southern Bangladesh that are home to more than 1 million Rohingya refugees. That is, humanitarian groups warn that the infection could devastate the crowded settlement. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. You're listening to VOA Asia. An Australian parliamentary report has debunked a conspiracy theory linking COVID-19 to 5G technology. Anti-lockdown protesters in Australia and beyond have claimed a connection between the new coronavirus and the rollout of the mobile communication standard. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has the story.
The COVID-19 pandemic has brought disparate groups of conspiracy theorists together. Some believe the disease was deliberately spread around the world to force vaccines onto the population as a form of control. Others assert that a Harvard University professor was arrested for creating and selling the coronavirus to China. Others insist that 5G technology is the true cause of COVID-19. It was a view that was reportedly first promoted in a social media video in March and has been shared widely on the internet. However, linking the new coronavirus to radio waves simply isn't true, according to a report by an Australian Parliamentary Communications Committee. It found that 5G technology was safe. E-communications experts say linking COVID-19 to radio waves has no basis in science and is biologically and physically impossible. This is a view shared by the World Health Organization and other authorities. They have found that 5G radiation can't penetrate skin or allow a virus to penetrate skin. In Australia, New South Wales state health officials have asserted that COVID-19 wasn't spread through mobile networks or wireless technology, but through infected droplets from coughing or sneezing, or by contact with contaminated hands, surfaces, or objects. Australia's Chief Medical Officer Brendan Murphy has also dismissed a link between 5G networks and the disease.
There's unfortunately a lot of very silly misinformation out there. There is absolutely no evidence about 5G doing anything in the coronavirus space. I have unfortunately received a lot of communication from these conspiracy theorists myself. It is complete nonsense. 5G has got nothing at all to do with coronavirus.
Academics say that fake news and misinformation seem to be spreading as fast and as far as the virus itself. Uncertainty and fear breed confusion, and as one expert said, conspiracy theories offer an emotionally satisfying narrative, even if they're not true. There have been small protests in Australia by groups angry at lockdown measures and at the government's coronavirus mobile phone tracing app. Demonstrators in Melbourne also sought to link an outbreak of the virus at a meat plant to a nearby telephone tower. Efforts are being made to sort the truth from the lies. YouTube has said it will do more to remove content linking 5G technology to COVID-19. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. India will provide free food grains to millions of migrant workers hardest hit by a weeks-long lockdown, as well as offer employment under a rural jobs program. Millions of workers have fled large towns and cities after they lost their jobs during the lockdown. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue now. Amid a spate of recent deadly attacks across Afghanistan, President Ashraf Ghani has ordered his national forces into offensive mode against the Taliban. Experts say the surge in violence does not bode well for the U.S. Taliban peace deal signed in February, which was meant to serve as a first step toward inter-Afghan reconciliation. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
A country scarred by decades of war. Militants storming the maternity ward of a Kabul hospital Tuesday, killing at least 14 people, including mothers and their newborn babies, stirring outrage.
I saw 8 dead bodies of women in this ward, and 7 other dead bodies were in the other ward on the beds. And they were hit on their heads or faces.
Sheer evil is how Secretary of State Mike Pompeo described the attack on mothers and newborns. The assault came on the same day as a suicide bombing of a funeral in eastern Nangarhar province. Together, the attacks killed at least 56 people. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani responded by ordering the country's security forces to shift from a defensive posture back to offensive mode against the Taliban and terrorist groups. His spokesman told VOA, the Taliban broke their promise to reduce violence.
Instead, they focused more on military operations, on increasing the attacks on the Afghan forces and the Afghan people. So we've not seen a clear sign of a commitment that is needed within the Taliban to end this war.
The Taliban have denied involvement in Tuesday's attacks, but the recent spike in violence threatens to undermine the already tenuous peace process following the February deal signed by the U.S. and the Taliban. Daily attacks have continued since the peace deal was signed, breeding skepticism among many about the prospects for reconciliation.
That is not a demonstration of peace that you want to make if you're actually willing to get into proper negotiations with the Afghan government.
Despite the skepticism, U.S. Special Representative for Afghanistan Reconciliation, Zalmay Khalilzad, took to Twitter following the attacks to call on the Afghan government and the Taliban to work together against a common enemy, saying, now is the time to press forward on peace. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
A message from your friends at VOA Asia. Can the coronavirus survive in cold weather? Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take: wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you're sick or advised to by local authorities. A message from your friends at VOA Asia.
New Orleans is a city known for its live music and vibrant street life. But since the arrival of COVID-19, there have been no more concerts or open bars, and the city has imposed strict limits on large social gatherings. But that hasn't stopped a couple of area residents from spreading music and joy to their grateful neighbors. VOA's Julie Tabo has more.
Pedicab operator Sarah Grant and classical violinist Anna Rosnovska are an unlikely duo. But the two got together after the city of New Orleans issued stay-at-home orders, threatening their lifestyles and livelihoods, and came up with a mobile music box, a rolling concert that winds its way through New Orleans neighborhoods, spreading music and joy among their neighbors.
Especially during a time like this when, we're seemingly separated from the community, other people that we love, and when a lot of very scary stuff is shown on the news, I felt it was really important to get out into the community and actually see the faces of the people in the city that I live in.
I love playing music, and I really believe in music. And in a time like this, yeah, we definitely need music more than anything else.
Many of their neighbors clearly agree.
Ah, breathtaking. You know, this is definitely what I need. I think during the time that we're at right now, it's appreciated.
It's amazing and uplifting, and you know, live music is what we miss most right now.
Fantastic.
I love it. It's fantastic. It's
something to cheer up the neighbor.
People on the streets were just like coming out of their homes, and we were just having goosebumps and crying, and there was this feeling of just like, no, this feels so right. This feels so good.
Grant is originally from Maine, and Rosnovska is a conservatory-trained classical violinist from a town near Krakow, Poland. They accept tips, but more so the good vibes coming their way.
If we make money, awesome, because, that helps, certainly. But, I think it was something that was definitely born out of love and probably has a bit of a life of its own.
I love playing music, and when I play music, I feel very purposeful.
Julie Tabo, VOA News.
Now on VOA Asia. With many drivers staying home during the COVID-19 pandemic, demand for corn-based ethanol, a carbon-neutral fuel mixed with gasoline, has plummeted. In 2018, the United States exported about 1.7 billion gallons of ethanol to more than 80 countries. As VOA's Kane Farabaugh reports, that amount is expected to drop this year, a troubling sign for farmers in the country that leads the world in corn and ethanol production.
As Ron Kindred waits for a break in the wet weather to begin planting corn and soybeans on his farm in the state of Illinois, he's facing fierce economic headwinds brought on by the coronavirus.
This could be the worst year we've had in a long time.
Last year, Kindred wondered how low soybean prices would go amid a trade war with the biggest market for them, China. This year, his chief concern is how low corn prices will go.
Corn has become an energy market. It follows crude oil, it follows ethanol, and ethanol follows crude oil.
Crude oil reached historic lows in April as fuel demand plummeted and Russia and Saudi Arabia battled for market share of the commodity. While prices are steadily rebounding, the record price drop sent an economic shockwave around the world that reached Kindred's farm.
It's depressed our corn prices from in the 360s down to 280 now.
According to the Renewable Fuels Association, about 70 ethanol plants in the United States are idled because of cratering demand. and at least 70 more are reducing operations. Overall, ethanol production is down by almost 50%. Given weak demand, some U.S. lawmakers want to suspend requirements that oil companies blend ethanol in their gasoline altogether.
Ethanol plants purchase about a third of the U.S. corn crop. With no one driving to work, demand for gasoline has basically plummeted.
Mike Doherty, senior economist for the Illinois Farm Bureau, says it's already too late for many farmers to transition to another crop.
How much can they really shift at this late stage in the game when they've already purchased their seed, they've already booked their fertilizer they need and their chemicals they need to grow these crops?
The extra corn that we have in our corn bin, usually grain bins, usually goes to the ethanol plant. It's 20 minutes away, but that has shut down because of the stay-at-home order and not traveling. So our bins are full.
The main product raised on Tina Hinchley's farm near Cambridge, Wisconsin, is milk from her dairy cows. But she and her family also grow crops. With limited storage space, plans are changing.
We are switching up to plant enough corn to make sure our cows have plenty of feed and maybe a little bit extra to fill our bins, but then we'll switch to the soybeans.
While Hinchley's situation illustrates how the price of one crop can impact farm management of other crops and food sources, Illinois farmer Ron Kindred says even his soybeans aren't immune to coronavirus-related price declines.
This slowdown in the economy has had a big impact on the volume of biodiesel that's being moved around the countryside, and so our biodiesel plants are cutting back. So there's less demand for soybean oil, and so there's less crushing for soybean meal, and it just kind of all adds up to impacting soybeans as well.
Kindred admits he's likely to lose money on whatever he grows this year, but believes he can manage the financial hardship. But the true economic impact of the coronavirus on American farms won't be understood immediately. The number of family farm bankruptcies rose 23% in the 12-month period that ended in March, just as the coronavirus lockdown was starting in many U.S. states. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Atlanta, Illinois.
The COVID-19 pandemic has spurred the highest unemployment numbers in the United States since the Great Depression. While more people are out of work, financial experts expect home prices to fall and interest rates to remain low, factors that could enable some young people to buy their first home. Aisha Sarai has more.
Experts predict home prices in the U.S. may decline and not recover for years because of the huge unemployment rate caused by the COVID lockdown.
In a weaker market, my guess is there is going to be a downturn in prices more generally. We know that over 30 million people have lost their employment over just the last 5-6 weeks or so. That means a weak market. That's got to mean lower prospective transaction prices.
Millennials who came of age during the 2008 financial crisis might be better prepared for evaluating the market, experts say.
They came of age during a time where economically it was very difficult. And for that reason, I think they are almost better in tune with sort of the financials of a purchase, right? So they are really looking at numbers.
Combined with being prepared, more young people might be able to buy their first homes if prices decline.
A lot of it was just budget and just, you know, knowing what we can afford now and knowing what, you know, hopefully we'll be back to work soon.
Experts say one big question about how the pandemic will affect home buyers in the future is where a home is located.
All right. What I think is really open, conceptual grabs at the moment is once we've made it through this pandemic, are people going to say, you know, I just don't want to be in a high density urban area? That's the place where pandemics spread and spread rapidly.
Experts say it will likely take years to fully see the pandemic's effect on the market. Isha Sarai, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our managing director, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Amy Falpaboon, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a great day ahead.